Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening once again, brothers and sisters, and we thank you this evening for turning into the PRF table. I'm your host, Brother Dunlap, and we're excited that you've come to a place where you have the freedom to listen in, the freedom to participate in this open and honest conversation about possessions, resources, and finances. Now, I know that many of you will agree that constructive, respectable, and even honest conversations about PRF is what we call it. It's needed in our communities, it's needed in our churches and our religious organizations, and even within our own families. And from conversations, we can move from dialogue, and from dialogue, we can move to a successful, practical application with a purpose. And I say that every week because that's what we're about here at the PRF table. We're really not just about having just these old conversations, Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders. We're really about making something there that can actually be practical in somebody's life. So we always like to say at the PRF table, everybody has a seat at this table. And it doesn't matter what your background is, where you come from, whether you're a Christian or not, you know, whether you're saved or not, none of that even matters. Only thing that matters is you have a place at the table. So for those who have sat at the table before, we just pray and believe that, you know, you've been able to see that this show is not just a regular old radio show, but it's a community where everybody has the opportunity to feed, eat, and serve. And so for that, let's go to my co-hosts, the ones who have been here with me from day one since we started this last year. Brother Feaster, how you doing this evening?
I am doing fantabulous.
Sister Sanders, how are you, ma'am?
I am doing great.
And let me just tell you, for those of you who may be new to the PRF table, Brother Feaster, this brother's from, I'm going to bust it out now, Brother Feaster, Jenkinsville, South Carolina. A small town north of Columbia, South Carolina. This is what I say. You're from Jenkinsville. You don't even need to talk about Columbia. Let people Google it. They can find out where it's at. But the thing about Brother Feaster, ladies and gentlemen, is he's been serving our country for over 20 years in the U.S. Army, and he's in the field of logistics. And so for our conversation tonight of stewardship, I think this is one of the perfect people that we can have because with the job of being a logistician, in the military, Brother Feaster, you have to know where things are supposed to go. You do audits, you do inspections, you have to know where things are, and you hold people accountable for that. So I think you are a good resource for that. And Sister Sanders, my cousin, she is stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. She's a major in the U.S. Army. I can tell you that myself and all the rest of the family are truly, truly proud of her. She's a woman of God, has a lot going on. A lot going on, especially with the house of God. So we just thank you for taking the time out. And I thank both of you, Brother Feaster, as well, for taking the time out to just come let yourself be used by God in this particular way, because there's a whole bunch of different things that we can be doing on our Thursday night. And I'm going to bless you out, Brother Feaster. Brother Feaster said, you know, we're competing a lot right now for listenership because of American Idol. And you know what I say to that, Brother Feaster? It's okay. Because reality says this, American Idol is not going to help you with your stewardship concept. American Idol is not going to help you learning about possessions, resources, and finances and how that can benefit your life and how you can benefit others. So American Idol, is, you know, they got commercials, so people can multitask. That's what I think this world is about in today's time. So we can go ahead and do more than one thing. So Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders, again, thank you so much, and let's get started. You know, over the last few weeks, over the last few shows, we've been focusing on the subject of stewardship. And we started off on February 14th with Attitudes About Stewardship. That was the title. And it just, as of right now, it just really seems that we are at a place where that was just an introduction to this whole series. And then last week on February 21st, we had Brother Saeed, who sat with us all the way from Philly. And he really gave us a lot to consider. And Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders, it was sometimes even convicting, was it not?
It sure was.
Yeah, it was convicting.
It also brought awareness to where we are and maybe where we thought we were when it came to the topic of stewardship.
Right. In particular, that's the title of last week's show was Diversities of Stewardship. So we had a, you know, all of us are Christians, myself, Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders, Brother Feaster and myself, we're both ministers with a piece of paper saying that we are. And Sister Sanders, she's a minister, even though she doesn't have a piece of paper. And we had Brother Saeed, who is a Muslim. And what that brother brought to the table was just phenomenal. And his humbleness and everything about him just was really on time for last week. So I say to all the listeners, if you were unable to catch any of those shows, just go back on the Blog Talk Radio page and check us out. And I can also tell y'all both that we had a lot of feedback from that one. I mean, we had so many comments that was posted on the website, on the Possession Resources and Finance Facebook page. And a lot of people were sending me texts, and I'm sure they was commenting back with y'all as well. So tonight, ladies and gentlemen, where we are tonight is we're about to have a conversation about stewardship at home and stewardship at work. And I'm going to tell you, Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders, it is a possibility that we may not get to stewardship at work. Oftentimes we have these good topics that God gives us, and we only really just touch on a little bit. And I think that's okay, because whatever we need to say, whatever God would have us to say, that's where we need to go. And so all we want to do now before we just delve right into it is just remind all of our listeners, if you want to join into the conversation, which we highly encourage, press 1 on your dial pad to join in on the dialogue. And we encourage everybody to do this, because it's not just about what we have as the host and the co-host of this show, but it's also you, the listeners, that really make this show really what it is. So with that, Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders, let's get to it. And I'm going to just throw out there what the questions are. If anybody looked at the Blog Talk Radio page on the We Speak Association Network, we had several questions that we posed out there, and here they are, and I'll let y'all just go from there. The questions that we have, ladies and gentlemen, is where does stewardship begin? Does it begin in the home? Who do we learn these principles from? How does stewardship apply at work? What does it look like at work? So those are the questions that we hope to deal with tonight, even if we can't get to all of them. You know, God willing, we have another week to do it. So, Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders, whichever one of y'all want to just jump into this conversation, where does stewardship actually begin?
I'm going to go ahead and speak, Nate.
Go ahead.
Stewardship starts at home, but I also think that it starts with the individual. And it has to start with an individual in a sense or in the aspect of modeling. And what I mean by modeling is that I may be in my home, but stewardship just didn't start because I had children and I got married. Stewardship started way before then. It started with what I saw modeled in my home as a child. It started with an individual that I saw. Because I don't think I was born into this world just knowing how to manage things. So it is something that was learned. So I'm going to say that for me, stewardship started when I grew up, you know, living with my mom and my stepdad, and what they showed me, and from there was able to increase in my own home. So it's kind of a twofold. I think it's first the individual in the home, and it is modeled for us so that we, in turn, can add to what we were taught. And because it starts at home and is modeled to us by our parents or whoever raises us, from that we are able to grow and we are able to add to what stewardship is based on what we saw growing up as a child, growing up in our neighborhood, and to those people that influenced our lives negatively and positively.
Brother Feaster.
I am in total agreement with her. It does start at home. I think we're born with the capability of being a steward, but it has to be redefined and caressed by the examples that we see around us. And in most cases, that stewardship will come from our parents. In most cases, that stewardship will come from the homes that we live in. But then there are those who are good stewards and they didn't learn that stewardship at home. You know, maybe they learned it at school, maybe they learned it at daycare, or maybe they learned it, you know, even in an orphanage or an organization that they were joined, that they was joined in. So it does start at home, but when it's not what we're looking for at home, then we'll seek out exactly what we're looking for that stewardship. I think we're all embedded with being a good steward. It just it has to be refined. Some people start out as a bad steward, but yet over time, after they learn or after they watch or they find the example that they're looking for, or if they never find it, they come up with some stuff on their own. But it there is an example. I think an example is the biggest foundation, the foundation for our stewardship. I mean, if you really think about as you were growing up and you watch your parents or you watch your older brother, your sister, or your grandparents or your aunt or your uncle, and then as you get out on your own and some of the same things that you saw them doing, now you're doing it, you don't even understand. For example, when I grew up, my mom used to always get the Dow's scrubbing bubbles to clean the house. So as soon as I got my own place, now that was years ago, and she had stopped using it and moved on to other stuff. But as soon as I got my apartment, as soon as I got my first place, the first thing I went and bought to clean my bathroom was some scrubbing bubbles, which I still use today. So that example is, I mean, it's hard to break that example, but it starts at home. It starts at the model. It starts at what we see. And then based off of that, that's where we go from there.
You know, Brother Feaster, what I hear you saying, you know, and just all of that, is that stewardship is we have been presented with different examples of stewardship in our homes. You talked about stewardship and cleaning, you know what I'm saying, stewardship and you know, maybe doing lawn, like yard-type work or whatever. And so when you were talking, as I'm listening to you, what I hear you saying is that your example of stewardship, I mean, there were different topics or different areas of stewardship that you saw exemplified in your home, you know, to cleaning and, you know what I'm saying, like, I can remember just my mom cooking and showing us, you know, telling us different things. So she was a steward example in cooking, you know what I'm saying, and teaching me and my sisters how to do the same thing. And I like how you said that with stewardship, it carries over. It carried over into your adult life. What you saw in your mom, you held on to that, and you carried it over into your adult life and made it a part of who you are as a person. I think that is so awesome that what we see modeled in our home, that a piece of that becomes a part of who we are as human beings into our adult life, and we can then pass that on to other people.
Well, you know, let me say this. I'm listening to what both of you are saying, and one of the things that I picked up from you, Adia, is that stewardship is a learned behavior. But then at the same time, you also made a comment about we're born with the capabilities. So there's a connection between how we're born to be a good steward. I don't believe that anybody is born created by God to be sloppy and messy. I just don't believe it. I believe it's exactly what you said. It's a learned behavior. So here's the question I would pose, because, you know, we pose, you know, questions not because we have the answers, because we want other people to talk about them. We want other people to provide some insights. What about when that model that you had, Sister Sanders, that model that you talked about, Brother Feaster, is not there? When you have, let's just talk real on the PRF table. When there's parents in the home, and we'll get to work in other places, but when there's parents in the home, or maybe just one parent that is working, doing the best that he or she can, and stewardship is not really a concern, how does that affect how that attitude of that child or that young person is as they grow up and move out of the home? Don't you think that they're not going to have those principles, and maybe that they're not going to be a good steward because they didn't learn those principles inside the home?
I would say no. I don't think that, because I know personally of two different stories where I know people who grew up with both of their families who worked hard, got college degrees, and showed them, you know, how to clean, cook, and different things like that. Grew up with both of their parents until one parent passed away. And they saw that. However, there were still things that they did not get from what they saw. So in return, when they got married, when they got older, they did not go to get their college degree. They went to a – they didn't get a four-year degree. Let me back up. They didn't get a four-year degree. They got married because they were told that was the right thing to do, but it did not last. And they are at home living with their parents. Now, they grew up in the two with both their mother and father, biological parents. Me, as an example, I did not grow up with my biological father living with me. I grew up with my mom and my stepdad. But and my both of my neither one of my parents graduated from college. But what they instilled in me was so far greater than that, that I went on to school to graduate with my bachelor's degree. I got my master's degree. I joined the Army. I brought my first home at a young age. I had a baby while I was in college. And so, but I didn't necessarily see all of those things modeled in my home. But because of the strong values and leadership and principles that were instilled in me as a child, it did not deter me from pushing forward to goals that I had, because my mother would teach me, if you want to get something out of a life idea, you got to set goals. But I didn't grow up with a biological father. So whereas this person that I know who did, somebody might look at that to say, well, oh, we think that this person is going to go far in life because they grew up with both of their parents, and statistics show children who grew up with both of their parents in the home are destined to do these great and wonderful things. And here I am, statistics speak against me, but my story is totally different. So that's the only thing that I would like to share, just to kind of show that difference. And it's what is in what's it modeled and the example that you get in your home.
I think that if you don't have the example in your home, well, the first question I want to pose is, as you're growing up, how do you know that you don't have a good example in your home? You don't. I was posed this question a while back, you know, and we were talking about how, you know, in the Army we deal with all types of people from all different types of cultures, you know, and all over. And somebody presented to me, what you think is normal may not be what the other person thinks is normal. So I grew up single-parent home, the only son, the oldest, small town, you know, country boy from South Carolina. But then somebody that grew up north where the pace is 100 times faster than it is in the South, their normal is totally different from my normal. So if I grew up in a house with good stewardship, and someone else grew up in a house that didn't have good stewardship, how do they know? How do they know that they're not being taught, they're not seeing those examples? They don't. They don't until they branch out. If they're living in a seclusive situation, they will never know. And a lot of times when, you know, we get them in the military and they don't have those good stewardship behaviors, that's what we have to do. So when you don't have it at home, which a lot of us don't have at home or didn't have it at home, or it may not even be what we want it to be, you still, I mean, it's embedded in us. I agree with you. I don't think we're born sloppy. I think we're born as good stewards, but it just has to be refined and defined. It has to be groomed. It has to be seasoned. You know, it has to be matured. And if we can't, just like anything else, if we can't find it here, we go looking. If you're thirsty and there is no water in the house, you're going to look for something to quench your thirst. So if you're looking for that example of a good steward, you may not know what you're looking for. But when you find it, you're going to know you have it.
And you know, one thing about it, you know, from my perspective, when I think about stewardship, that's not a topic, one, that we even like to talk about in the church. And when I say that, I'm talking about from the perspective of talking about the whole totality. We can have a conversation about stewardship of the house of God, but what about stewardship in the home?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about this question too. I said, how many people do you go to church with that's never stepped foot inside of your home? If we fellowship every Sunday or 3, 4, 5 times a week, however you do it, where you do it, and you've never been to my home, how do you truly know if I'm a good steward? Because what happens on Sunday? We come with our Sunday best on, right? People dress up. They look good. But what does the home look like? And I know we often talk about, Brother Feaster, we often talk about, you know, getting yourself right. But I think there's some accountability. I think there's some responsibility that we have towards one another to be able to help one another in this area of stewardship. I mean, that's my thoughts. You know, you know, we don't always agree on the PRF table, ladies and gentlemen, and that's okay. We're not supposed to. We don't have to. But that was one of the things that came to me, came to my mind earlier this week, was how many people actually know what the home looks like. So if we're having a conversation about stewardship, my only concept about you and stewardship is what I see at church. And then the other part of that would be, how many of you out there listening really wouldn't want nobody coming to your house because of how your home looks on the inside?
Well, JR, what you're saying ties into what Sister Sandra said, that there's different levels of stewardship. Someone can be an excellent steward at work, at church, but not at home or not raising the children. I mean, I think that's what she was saying. There are different levels of stewardship. My stewardship at church is my devotion to my church. It's my devotion to the pastor. It's my devotion to the religion. It's my devotion to God, whatever the case may be or wherever that person's going. But then when I get home, I'm tired. You know, my stewardship is I fed the kids. Now it's time to go to bed and relax. Get ready for work tomorrow.
Well, Brother Feaster, so we're talking about possession, resources, and finances, and then when you talk about people and we talk about to this person, that person, what is the definition that you're using to say this is what stewardship is? If we all have different definitions, I'm asking that so people can hear you say where you're coming from and how you're defining stewardship. How are you defining stewardship?
The definition I'm using for stewardship is the one that comes out of the Bible when God talks about stewardship. That word stewardship means a manager. It means a manager. And so that's the definition I'm using for stewardship.
Okay. And I think Webster says just a responsible, the careful and responsible management of something entrusted to one's care. So going back to the home, stewardship at home. Let's talk about inside the home and what's actually inside the home that has been entrusted to us. Inside the home, because think about the analogy of a child. How many of you listening out there, when you were a child, your parents or your grandmama or whoever raised you or whatever household you lived in said something to us about keeping our room clean? Brother Feaster? Did you hear that growing up?
Oh, plenty of times.
Yeah, I heard it growing up. So that is a principle that was being instilled in most children growing up. We were taught, without having this word of stewardship being what we knew at that particular time, this is your little room. This is your space. These are your toys. Mommy and Daddy don't play with the toys. Don't play with the ball. This is yours. You got a toolbox or toy box, maybe or maybe not. But whatever it is inside of this room, we were trained as young people, as kids from an early age, that this is yours and you need to take care of it. You can't have toys all over the place. And then what happened as if we did not obey that? I don't, Brother Fisa, you can tell on yourself and tell what happened to you, because I know you didn't keep a clean room, because you just said it all the time. You heard it all the time. So evidently you wasn't listening, right?
No, I still don't listen.
But there's some
accountability in stewardship. There is some responsibility in stewardship. There's some leadership in stewardship. You know, the responsibility is, I went and pulled up the definition. The Bible says that a steward is the manager of a household or household affair. I think it's almost pretty much in line with what Webster is saying. Specifically, the manager, oversight, administration of others' property. And you know, the room that I have as a child, is it my room? It is not my room. I am residing in that room until it's time for me to go.
Mm-hmm.
So if the parents decide to take that room and turn it into an office and put me in the room with one of my other siblings, then I have no say-so in it. I have a voice, but I don't have no say-so. I can speak up, but ultimately, it is not my role. And that's why that's where the responsibility and the leadership comes in. So as me and part of the training to become a good steward is being held accountable. So when I'm not taking care of my space, my little world, then those that are higher than me, those in authority, have to come in and teach me what it means to be a steward over this small. And you know, once you learn stewardship there, once you learn how to be a good steward in your room, that's when you get more responsibility. So the leadership plays a part. The responsibility plays a part. All that plays a part. And it goes back to grooming someone to be a steward, to be a good steward.
I can tell you this. I know growing up, we had a caller that was trying to recall in for a few minutes on 5656. So if you're still out there, just go ahead and press 1 and we'll get to you. So I'm going to save my comment because we have a caller calling for 5656. I know I'm about to catch it, Brother Feaster. Go ahead. Caller from 5656, last 4, you're on the air.
Yes, can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Okay, good evening, everyone. This is Marianne speaking. I'm listening to everything you're saying. It's bringing up really some old memories here about, you know, the Bible says you train up a child in the way it should go. Mm-hmm. And when I was I'm going to give you expand from me being a baby to 10 years. Okay, my mother didn't want me, okay? But she was in the house with us. But she loved my brother. So it was like I lived in fear. All right, and then my grandmother, which was my grandmother's home and my grandfather's home, but he was never there because he had another family, so he would come in now and then. So it was just really my grandmother and my two aunts and my mother. So there's a four of us there. Okay, we had to live with my mother. The sisters didn't like my mother. And so our mother never did anything for us, and she was right there in the house. She never cooked, she never cleaned, she never talked to me. But my brother could talk to her, and she kept her door closed. And he could go in there, but I couldn't go in there, you know. And so one time, make a long story short, you know, I like these orange slices. So I saw those orange, the door was open, I saw these orange slices, and he went in and I went in. And she took up a shoe and threw at me those high heel shoes, and then I was just so scared of her. So I just lived in fear, and my brother always protected me. He would always share with me what she did. So we never had any conversations. So number one, I lived in fear. Number two, I was sickly. I was a severe asthmatic. Our house was like a shack. It was cold and rainy in there, and I was just sick all the time. And my grandmother would hold me and my grandmother would just rock me and things of that nature. So she pampered me when she was there. But when she was not there, you know, my brother and I did not eat because the sisters would her sisters would tell us, you know, let your crazy mama fix you something to eat. So we only ate once a day when mom, well, I call her mommy, when mommy
okay.
came home, you know. And so then from there, okay, I didn't know how to make a bed. I was, okay, say I'm going to 10 years old now. I'm 10 years old. I don't know how to make a bed. I don't know how to wash dishes. I don't know how to wash clothes. I don't know how to do anything. And then my grandmother decided that she let me stay with my great aunt. Now, my great aunt was single, and she was different, and she was an educator. So now I'm put into this role where you're going to learn to make your bed. You're going to learn to do this and these things. And I did not like her because I thought she was mean to me, you know. But my grandmother, I wrote my grandmother and told her, I want to come back to you, Mommy. I said, because she mean to me. My grandmother wrote me back and said, no, you're going to stay and do what she tells you to do. Then my aunt would say, I don't care if you don't like me as long as you do what I tell you to do. So here I am. But it took about a good, I'd say a good two years to get me straight because I was just so rebellious, you know. And this particular morning, she was a teacher, and she would get up, fix my breakfast, fix my lunch, et cetera, and I would stay in the bed. Well, this particular morning, I decided I'm going to stay in the bed. And she didn't say, she came in and woke me up, and I had my own mouth stuck out, you know. I'm getting up, and
mm-hmm.
I didn't get up. And it was in the summertime, and I had a baby doll pajamas on, and man, she came in there with that switch, and that was the end of that. I said, no more. I'm going to do what I'm told to do. And so when I made up my mind to do that at 12 years old after that bad beating, you know, it was because of her and what my grandmother, how she knew I needed some help, that I am who I am today. Because you
mm-hmm.
got up in the morning, you made your bed up, you know, before and when you come home, you put your clothes away. You know, she really trained me. And my English was, you know, forget it, you know, And so
yeah.
I would say they is, and she said, no, it's not they is, it's they are, you know. And then I was upset about that because I said, I don't want to talk no more to her, you know.
Right.
But I'm so glad that she stood her grounds. It wasn't, she didn't care if I didn't like her. She didn't care if I talked about her because she said, my goal is to teach you to be able to operate in the world, you know. And to make a long story short, it is so important that you do have that example in your life because otherwise I don't know where I would have been today.
Mm-hmm.
And the environment back there was not that good either, you know, because men was coming in and out. So, you know, I just really, it does make a difference.
Right.
And that's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you, caller. We thank our caller for that comment. You know, one of the things that I heard that it's a dynamic there, brothers and sisters, that there's not always the positive dynamic about stewardship. Sometimes there's a negative dynamic about stewardship, and we thank God for the caller's mother sending her to her aunt that allowed her to see a whole different side of stewardship. And I think that's important. It's not just how we want to do it as children as we were growing up, you know, keeping our room any old kind of way, not making up our bed, those type of things. That's not our choice. We're inside of somebody else's home. And I think it was Adia, or maybe it was you, Brother Feaster, that said, to me, it says, it's not mine. This whole thing about stewardship is understanding and realizing that what you have is not yours. When we realize that what we have is not ours and that it has come from a power that is higher than us, and I would say that it's come to us from God, that should give us a different mindset because you said it, Brother Feaster, very well. If your parents chose to take you from this room and move you into another room, whose choice was it? You had nothing to do with it because you don't own the house. You didn't own the room. So I thank our caller for that. Caller, if you can, just press 1 on your dial pad. That way you'll go off the switchboard. And if you want to make a comment, press 1 again. We'll see you light back up. You're listening to the PRF table. We really just want to encourage everybody that's out there listening. Press 1 on your dial pad, join into the conversation. We really want to hear from you. Brother Feaster, did you have anything that you wanted to continue with the conversation with before we go to another section?
Yeah, I like the tie-in that she gave. You know, she came in and really expounded on exactly what we were saying. When you don't get the example at home, you're going to get it from somewhere. In this case, she didn't go out looking for it. It came looking for her, you know. And that's a different part that we didn't even think about. Even if you don't look for it, somebody may be looking at it from you. They may see it in you or see the direction that you're going. And it's interesting how, as her aunt was trying to tell her, do this, do that, do this, do that, it's interesting how she got rebellious. You know, so she was stuck in her ways. This is how I was raised. This is how I was brought up. And I bring that point out, not to embarrass her, but I bring that point out because when we become adults and we say that, you know, we know how to keep the house clean or we know how to wash the car, we know how to wash the clothes, and then we're confronted with you're not doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's a better way. It may not even be that you're not doing it right. Maybe there's a better way. And then we may or may not get rebellious. We may or may not, you know, subject to the stewardship. But her aunt cared enough to be the authority figure, to be the steward example and the standard setter, that she really went ahead and just continued on with showing her what she needed. Because a lot of times we don't know what we need, especially as a child. A child just thinks they need candy. That's it.
Right.
No food,
right.
No shower, they'll wear whatever. They don't, you know, those things have to be taught. So, I like that point. I like that point. I like it. I like that point.
Now, on February 14th, when we were talking about stewardship, I think Brother Feaster, he had talked about, you know, that you could become, be a steward over something that God did not give you.
Well, that I brought that up. I said, and I posed it as a question, or maybe I made a statement, you know, can you really be a steward over something that God did not give you? If God told you that you could not buy this car and you decide mm-hmm. that you're going to go buy it anyway, don't be upset if you're not able to make the payments. Don't be upset if, you know, somebody comes out and steals the car. You can't take care of something. And Brother Feaster, if I'm not mistaken, I believe I wrote it down, Brother Feaster said you cannot be an effective manager
mm-hmm.
over what is not yours. Am I right, Brother Feaster?
Right. Right. You're right. You brought up the initial question, and then I said you can't be an effective steward of something that's not yours.
Now, in saying that, think about the word effective. The caller that just called, is it that she was not, and that sometimes we don't get, that we are being, receiving stewardship, or we're being stewarded, if that is a word, I don't know, but it's not effective or that it's not positive? And I ask that question because when we look at the word leadership, and we know being in the military, that's a big word. Everybody's a leader. But we have the ability to impact and influence people in a positive way. But when you look at gangs, when you look at the mafia, they are leaders as well. And they're impacting people and influencing them in a negative way. So is it possible that in stewardship, that we can receive it, but it not be effective and be the positive impact influence that we need in order to help us to grow into our adulthood to where we'll make those right decisions? Because we could very well live in a home where there's abuse, where there's alcoholism, where you don't go to church, where nobody's pushing you to further your education. And you, as a child, come up with defense mechanisms or survive ways to survive that and become a judge, never drink, never put your hand on a woman. So I want to ask that question, if there's anybody out there and that's listening, could there perhaps be a way that you receive, that you're getting stewardship in your home, but maybe it's not the best. Maybe it isn't that positive stewardship. However, is it still considered stewardship?
While we wait on the call, I just want to say something real quick. So you talked about the gangs, and you talked about the stewardship being taught in the gangs. It's not used in a positive manner, but it's still stewardship.
Right.
It's still stewardship. They're still learning stewardship, And it goes back to what I said before. What I think is what I know to be normal, you may not know to be normal. So although in the home, I'm a leader in the home, and I'm the father, and I'm the, you know, the God, and I, you know, but in the gang, if I'm the whatever the gang leader is called, and I'm being a father figure, and I'm giving out direction and orders and mentorship them to be better gang members, it's the same stewardship, just done in a different way.
You know, and I can give you a good example, too. I don't know if anybody has ever seen the movie Original Gangster. No, I'm sorry. American Gangster with Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
Story. And I remember there was a scene in that movie when there was a party going on inside of his house. And, of course, this drug dealer, entrepreneur, businessman had a lot of money. And I remember something happened where somebody spilled something on the rug. And the rug was made out of alpaca, right? And
yeah.
Very expensive. I don't have none of that in my house, bro. And I remember looking at that like, man, he's not playing. You know, this is my house. And there was some other stuff that went on, and he just was not having what was going on inside of his house. All day long, he was being a steward over his home. But we're not talking about the fact that he was a drug dealer. We're not talking about that part of it. We're just looking at inside a home, his home was going to look a certain way. He was not going to have a rug with some wine on it, a white rug with some spot of wine, red wine, just sitting there. That was not going to be good. That was not going to be acceptable. So that's some of the stuff that we're talking about. You know, there's stuff that happens in our homes. If we don't take charge of it, if we don't look at it and say, you know what, this sink has been fixed, has been broken for the last 20 weeks. I'm not being a good steward just by having this sink that has not been working over the last 20 weeks when my wife is constantly telling me, hey, this sink needs to get fixed. Because what it does, you talked about the father and the husband. You talked about all that just a minute ago, Brother Feaster. In the big scheme of things, everybody is always watching what's going on inside your home. What we do as individuals living within our home, if you're married, your husband or your wife is looking at you. If you're a father or a mother, your children are looking at you. We're looking at our children. So to me, it seems that we have to be willing to be judged by the same standard that we want to judge others by when it comes to stewardship.
So who sets the standards for stewardship? Because, we've thrown out a lot of different scenarios and a lot of different situations, and even two different definitions of stewardship. So who sets the standard for stewardship? Who sets it? Army? Go ahead.
I was going to say, listening to what Nate said, even that example of that movie, he learned how to clean from somewhere. He learned that, hey, if you spill something, you got to clean it up or it's going to possibly stain and mess up your rug. Regardless,
he probably learned it at home.
And that's what I was going to, because I'm pretty sure he didn't learn that in the street. Like, hey, somebody spilled some red wine on your rug, you need to get that up, because that's not the mentality, or that's not, what you're going to learn in the streets. It's kind of, strive to survive.
Exactly.
So because he did it in his home, it's almost safe to probably say that he learned it in his home. And I think the reason why we can say stewardship starts in a home and that we learned it in our home, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, is because of the structure of how God ordained family to be.
Okay,
and that family, originates with a mother and a father. But we also know that family could be that extended family. Family could be a cousin, a grandmother, a grandfather, aunt, or uncle, because the caller already told us that, hey, her grandmother saw something in her and sent her to go live with an aunt, and she grew up to get that positive stewardship that she needed because she was not getting it home. And so her grandmother was able to recognize that, hey, I may not be able to give it to you all because of the environment that we are in, but I can send you to another family member who is going to be able to pour into you and be the example that you need. not just in word, but in deed, because she showed her how to make up a bed and then reinforced it, told her how to make the bed, but reinforced it by showing her how to do something. And so in our stewardship, because it starts in the home, sometimes that home is not with a mother or father. That home could be with an aunt or uncle or a grandmother or a grandfather.
Sister Sandra, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
That's the premise. Do you know that, and I'm not insulting your intelligence by far, I'm just asking a rhetorical question. Do you know that a gang is a form of family? That's why a lot of broken homes, a lot of the children in broken homes end up in gangs because it's built around a family structure. So in that family structure, you know, these are my brothers, and now we're being taught, although it's mostly geared toward the gang itself, we're being taught how to be good stewards. We're being taught how to run numbers. We're being taught how to do drugs. We're being taught how to do violence. We're being taught how to be the next level gang leader, whatever the case of the gang may be. And not all gangs are negative either. I'm using a lot of negative connotations. But, you know, so even in that gang, there's things that are being taught. There's a learned behavior of stewardship. I think that in addition to that, stewardship branches out. So what I learned in that gang, like, for example, I read something years ago that a gang lord, someone that is, like, overall a whole group, is their leadership ability and the way the gang is structured, a gang lord is equivalent to a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. They're doing the exact same thing. So those same leadership styles are being taught in both of those situations. And once we learn the premise in one situation, we can take that principle and apply it to something else. So in the movie, if he didn't learn how to clean that rug or know that that rug needs to be cleaned, maybe he understood that the things that I purchase are so expensive that I want to keep them clean. And he used that same principle that I may not know how to clean it. I may not know it needs to. I may not know how to clean it, but I know it needs to be cleaned because I want my stuff clean.
And you know what I could say too, Brother Feaster? He did not learn it from home. He may have learned the principle of you know, this is your home. You know, regardless of where you're living, do the best by where you're living. Do the best by where you're living. But I could tell you for a fact that there was not any carpet during that time that he had in his home in Greensboro, North Carolina. He learned that from another person who was in his life, Bumpy, who was the individual who, like the father figure to him as he grew up in the drug game, who lived a very, we're getting some feedback on one of y'all, he learned that from him. He learned about having nice things and fine things from this other individual who was the drug dealer, the drug kingpin in New York City at that particular time. That's where he learned about some of those quote-unquote finer things in life and how you take care of them. But I believe wholeheartedly in my heart that the principle behind it started at home. I don't believe that his mother allowed him to have his room looking any old kind of way and didn't say anything, like it was okay. And let me just do this because we've been talking for about 45 minutes, and that's good. The conversation has been good, and, you know, we just keep on going until we stop. But I want to say this real quick, and then we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and really talk about something else. As many people that are out there listening, we just want everybody to know that, you know, this is not just a show about money. It's not just about dollars and cents. It's not about helping somebody just get out of debt, or just helping you build up your credit, or just having these dry old conversations about financial or economic driven aspects about life that affect you and me. What this is about is about what we're doing as a community. It's about how we take these three critical components of possessions, resources, and finances, and seeing how they individually and collectively affect you, affect me, affect our local community, and even affect the broader community. So what I'm saying to all of us that are listening is, you know, one of the purposes here is just for us to explore how each one of these components of PRF is interconnected, and actually interdependent upon one another. So what I want to do right now, because Brother Feaster has been in my mind, has been in my heart, what we're talking about as we talk about this concept of stewardship, this principle of stewardship, we're talking about how we treat the stuff that God has given us. God has given me a house. How do I treat this house that he has given me, this home that he has given me? He's given me furniture. I'm not sleeping on the floor. How do I treat the bed? One thing in my household, everybody, my wife makes up the bed. That is something that she has learned at an early age, and she makes up the bed every morning. If she leaves before I do and she comes back home and the bed is not made, I get a look. But one thing she knows is I may have learned that principle when I was a child, but I didn't learn it that much. It wasn't ingrained in me that much because I don't do it. I got away from it. So we're talking about treatment. We're talking about how we treat the things that we have given. So let's just go to a song real quick. It's called Treat 'Em Right. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about a few other things. So stay tuned with us. I'm Brother Dunlap. We have Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders joining in with us on this evening. Brother Feaster, I think we have a little bit left in us. And let me take us back to somewhere where we were a couple of weeks ago when we first started this. What we were talking about, the first show, just to catch some people up if you were not there with us, was attitudes about stewardship. That's where we were. And so this conversation that we're having this evening is really furthering that conversation, because it's all about the attitude. It's all about the mindset. It's all about what you think about whatever it is that God has given you. But then that's the same token. It's really about how, if you even think that God has given it to you. I refer back to my niece, Tootie. I remember when my niece was about you know, when did they start walking about two? I remember she came in the house one day, and she walked in and walked in the living room, and she just took her jacket off and threw it on the floor. Hmm? Who does that? That was my thought process. I was like, Tootie, uh-uh, take that coat up. She really wasn't even talking really good at that particular time. But I could tell you that it only took two times for me to let her know, uh-uh, you're not just going to throw this on the floor. It wasn't that her mom wasn't teaching her good principles of stewardship, because we oftentimes learn things about stewardship and any other thing in life, not just from home, but we learn it from other places as well. And do you know, to this day, she will not put that coat on the floor. I also had to go through a phase with her with her shoes. Take off her shoes and leave them in the middle of the floor. No, you put them by the door if you're going to take them off. So really, Brother Feaster, you said it well. This thing, we keep going back to values. We keep going back to leadership. And I'm glad that we have all the listeners that are out there listening to us right now, because this is conversations that we need to have, ladies and gentlemen. We need to talk about the things that are really going on in people's house. And as I said earlier, all you church folk out there, if people from your church really don't ever come to your house, how do they know if you're being a good steward? How do they know if you're being a good steward if they never come into the place that's personal with you? And I'm not advocating for everybody to come to your home, but somebody should be able to come in fellowship to your home, and you should want them to come into your home as well. So, Brother Feaster, what other comments do you have, good brother?
Just that value thing just resounded as when you came back and you were saying what you were saying. I think a lot of times we don't understand the value of some of the things that we're held responsible for. I take things for granted. I take things for granted. And as I take these things for granted, my stewardship is going to play a part in it. It's going to be affected by it. I take for granted that I have a job. I'm a U.S. soldier. I am in the Army. And I went to a section that I frequently talk to the people all the time, and it was made up of VA civilians who are all DOD workers, just like I am. And the word had just came out that they're about to go on a 20-day furlough because of the budget cut. So I took for granted, I decreased the value of my job because I know on the 15th, I'm going to get a paycheck. But yet I was confronted with a whole office of VA civilians who are now concerned about 28 days, two pay periods out of their life that possibly is going to happen.
Wow.
So when I took for granted my paycheck and I went in there to talk to them, and, you know, I'm getting ready to retire about 3-4 years, you know, they was like, well, you might even stay in because we didn't even guarantee the paycheck next pay period and stuff like that. You know, and so we you know, taking that for granted decreases the value of the paycheck that I have. Except for once in my military career, there was no doubt in my mind that I was going to get paid. And that was 2 years ago when they decided they wanted to wait to the very last hour, like 11:59 p.m., to come up with a budget. But I take it for granted. The value is decreased. So my stewardship in that case was not based on the amount of money that I was making. My stewardship was based on the faithfulness of the money.
Mm.
So, those things that we value. So I previously had a Toyota Tundra truck, and I valued that truck because I love that truck. But then I traded that in, you know, them gas prices, they showed it and helped me out. Traded that in. But now I have a Nissan Altima. Well, I don't treat that, and I'm going to be honest, I don't treat the Altima like I did the truck. I'm saving a lot more money in gas, but because I don't value it the way that I did it, like right now it's a little dirty, and I'm not concerned. I've had to clean one of the floor mats for about a month and a half now, and I'm not concerned. But that would have never happened in the truck. Both of them are excellent pieces of machinery to get you to and from work. Both of them are very reliable. Both of them are nice vehicles, no issues with either one of them. But because my value of them my stewardship was affected. So I wonder, and I'm asking that to everyone who's listening, or anyone who's listening, I wonder, you know, do we really pay attention to how we value things? Because that is a major contributor of our stewardship. It's a major contributor. You know, you can have all the leadership you want. You can have, you know, the best person trying to teach you how to be the best father. He could have gotten Father of the Year for 10 years in a row. But if you don't value that person, if you don't value what he is teaching you, if you don't even value being a father, then that teaching that you're receiving, you're not going to be a good steward over. And if you are going to be a good steward, it's going to show because you're not being sincere. So I think we need to pay attention to how we value things, because that is and it's not so much monetarily. So don't think it's money. It's not money, because you have people that have big houses and are not good stewards of them, but you have people that have small houses and good stewards of them. So it's what we place value on that we will become good stewards over, excellent stewards, effective stewards over.
And let me say this too, to add to what you were saying, Brother Feaster. It's not about how much you have. It's not about how much I have. It's really just about taking care of what we have been provided with. Remember the scripture that we dealt with was Genesis chapter 2, when God gave Adam the Garden East of Eden. And I didn't say this the other day, but I can't remember if I did or not. You know what's amazing about that part of the story, the creation story with Adam and Eve, is that God didn't give him the whole garden. He only gave him a portion of it. And I used to tell my students all the time when I was having conversations, not specifically about stewardship, but on budgeting, you know, that's what the world likes to call it sometimes as well. The amount of money that you have is not going to make you happy. But what you do with what you have does make God happy. There's a difference there. And God is always looking to see what you're going to do with what he's giving you. So if the house that you're living in, listeners, is only an apartment right now, the dwelling that you're living in is only an apartment, do right by that apartment. I know a lot of times in church we hear in the church setting, you know, we hear about God is going to bless you with this and bless you with that. I think men and women of God, you got to be careful when you start putting those blessings on people, because the reality is God knows what you're doing with what he's already given you. So I may want to say, Brother Feaster, I know you're going through it right now, but God is going to bless you. I know you don't have a job right now, but God is going to bless you. Maybe that person doesn't have a job because they lost a job because they didn't go to work on time like they were supposed to. So how in the world is God just going to all of a sudden give you a big old house because you're in an apartment right now and you haven't even done the right thing by the one that you actually have? Why would you expect God to bless you with a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house when the 2-bedroom apartment looks a mess all the time? Go ahead, bro.
Let me just say something real quick and I'll let you get back. And in that analogy that I use, which is a true analogy about the truck and the car, that's one of the things that's convicted me. Right there, exactly what you're saying. You know, I still have transportation, and I still have to be a good steward over. I just want to put that in there. Go ahead.
Well, and so that's the thing is, you know, God didn't give Adam the whole; he gave him a portion. So God gives us a portion, and it's about just what are we doing with what God has actually given us. And I'm just convinced that, you know, as we're faithful to God, if we're doing what we know we're supposed to be doing with what we have, then that puts God in a position of being able to bless more. And we talked about blessings back in December, and we had a couple of shows about blessings, and I think this is when you were getting really fired up, Brother Feaster, about trying to get to the stewardship part when we were talking about the blessings. So, you know, so we're here. So we have a couple more minutes left in the show. Press 1 on your dial pad if you want to join in on the conversation. Hit us up on Facebook, possessions.resources.finances. Sister Sanders, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. I'm
did
here.
You have any, matter of fact, let me hold tight. We have a caller that's on the line calling from 5656, so we'll go ahead and let them speak briefly as soon as they come.
Okay,
to
hi, everybody. This is Marianne again. When you were talking about the value, my aunt was teaching me the value of time when I told you she gave me that bad beating because, you know, she was organized. She had to drop me off so that I would be picked up to go to school. Then she had 15, you know, miles to drive for herself to get to her school, you know, to teach. And so today, I don't like being late. I mean, I just don't like being late because I began to really understand how important it is to be on time. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, my sister. You know, and maybe that's a good segue because the title of the show is Stewardship at Work, Stewardship at Home. And we didn't think that we were going to be able to get to stewardship at work, but since she's gone ahead and opened up the doorway, the pathway, Brother Sister, I can tell you, I'm the same way. Everybody who knows me knows that being late is just not an option. Maybe I learned that from my mother. And you know, it's amazing because I learned that from my mother, not realizing that I learned that from my mother. I learned that from my mom, but I didn't realize I learned it from my mom. Matter of fact, I just recently learned that I learned that from my mom. Interesting. Brother Feaston.
You just referred back to the example of stewardship, and then you tied in how stewardship transcends. She learned from her aunt about being on time, and she took it to work. I learned that from the military. I mean, right now, being on time is being late. Being early is being on time. And that's
right.
Just from being in the military. That's that military upbringing, that military, especially being a leader, you got to be there ahead of time before your soldiers get there. And I learned something in the home that I brought to work. As I was out there cutting up back in my heyday, way back in my day, I used to frequent women with children. And I had this one particular female that had two kids, and early in the morning, they tearing up the house, tearing it up. So by the time we wake up, the house is a mess. She get up hollering and screaming, beating kids, everybody screaming and hollering. I'm walking out the door because I ain't got nothing to do with this. So when I got married and then I had my children, my thing is now I want to be up before my children. I don't want to give them that opportunity to tear up my house. I want to be up and make sure that they're doing the right thing. And so, you know, the stewardship transcends. It goes back to what we were saying. Once the principle is learned, just like anything else, once you learn the principle, that old cliche that Sister Sanders brought up a couple of weeks, last week, that says you can feed a man a fish and he'll eat a meal, or you can teach him how to fish and he'll eat for a lifetime. So once we learn the principle, we can take that principle and transcend. So I think that we're establishing some principles of stewardship. We are establishing that stewardship has a leadership. There's an example part in there. Stewardship has a value. You got to value the thing, you know. I think if we're learning the principles, then we can transcend them to any other areas of our life. That's how those, you know, gang members can take those things, give up the gang, and then be very productive at a work. Because the same principles that they learn of stewardship and leadership and ownership is used at Walmart, is used at IBM, is used in the Army, you know, is used wherever.
I like what you said, Brother Feaster. And Sister Sanders, you can jump in anytime. What you learned at home, you took it to work. What I learned at home, I took it to work. I learned at home, you know, I think I learned the principle about not being late. Don't come in here late on curfew. As I think about it, that's probably where I learned it at. And that's probably that principle that was given to me, which caused me not to want to be late for anything and really don't like it if I happen to be late. So I do everything that I possibly can not to be late. That's a good principle to have, and that transcends. So let's talk about work. How do we be stewards? How can we be effective, to use your word, effective stewards in the workplace? Is it something that's only for managers? Or is it at any level, whatever position you have, is there a principle of stewardship that should be applied at work by you as an individual?
Well, May, I just want to, you know, I was pondering on, you know, about being a steward at work. And I really like what the caller said and what both of you and Feaster said about one being on time. I think there's something about just timeliness and growing up where my mother was late for everything. Church, she was on time for work, at least from what I saw she was on time. But church, we were late every Sunday. Mm. What that did for me was that I hate being late for anything, especially for church and work. Those are like pet peeves of mine. I feel like I should be on time for my job because it sets a precedent. And so when I am dealing with, you know, being in the Army and dealing with soldiers and different things like that, I always make sure that I am on time for work. And if I am running behind for any reason, whether it's because I have a doctor's appointment or whatever the case may be, that I have enough integrity to call somebody to let them know. And I don't call them, you know, when I'm en route. I'm calling them to say, hey, I got this going on right now, and I'm going to be running behind to let them know that something has happened that's going to prevent me from being there late because I don't like being late for work. And so when I look at stewardship with, you know, where I work at, I think that it is not just management because we've already established that stewardship starts in the home. So when we are at work, we are taking what we have learned at home and we are bringing that into our workplace. And I say that because you have people who they grew up to where they brought lunch. Their parents said, hey, we're not spending money for you to have school lunch, so you're going to bring lunch with you. Well, I was one of those kids who brought their lunch to school. So guess what I do at work? I bring my lunch with me. And so I think that what we learned at home goes over into how we are stewards at our jobs, and that we all, to a certain degree, whether we are in leadership, management position, have soldiers under us or people over us or we're a supervisor, I think that we bring stewardship to work, but how we apply it is differently based on our position and based on the position that we're in. Because when I'm dealing with my soldiers who are all older than me and have been married longer than me and have grown children of their own, but here I am, you know, a major and they're a sergeant first class or a warrant officer or an E5, I still have a level of respect for them. But as because of the position of authority that I am in, I still have to set the tone. So even though they're older than me and they have more experience than me because of that experience in the Army, there are things that I give them from my leadership perspective. And so I'm bringing that into the job. I let them know, hey, when we got something going on, we're going to let one another know. And so I really see that there's such a close connection to stewardship at home and in the job, and that we do bring that. And what stewardship at work means is that we are examples. Whether that example is, hey, when you put together an action, you need to make sure that it has a cover letter on it. You need to make sure that that you've at least reviewed it before you've given it to me, that, you know, these people have initialed off on it. So I think stewardship, you know, at the workplace is taking some of those skills that we can use from what we learned at home and apply it to our work based on what our position is and whether or not we have people that we supervise or not.
You know,
can I reverse something she said in agreements with you? It's interesting because when I got married, I didn't have a good example of being a father, being a good leader in the home, but I was an excellent non-commissioned officer. I mean, you can give me the mission. Matter of fact, my first squad, they gave me all the difficult missions, every last one of them, and I excelled in every last one of them just to come home, and I didn't feel like I was excelling at home. And what I did, I took the things that I learned from being a leader at work, how to communicate, how to make decisions, voice control, voice command, getting the information before you make the decision. I learned all the things that I learned at work, I took it home. I took it home, and that helped me become a better father and a better husband.
You know, one of the things that I think about when it comes to stewardship at work is if we have the principle of stewardship at home, if we have a good understanding that, hey, this home is, you know, God blessed me with this home. God has given me this home, so I need to do right by it. It won't be a problem, or it shouldn't be a problem when we go to work. So I think we have to be careful about the attitude and not having that same attitude when we go to work. And let me say it like this. How many times do you know, or how many people do you know, that go to work and keep the lights on, to go out their office, don't care about electricity? Adia, Brother Feaster, myself, military. We know good and doggone well that people in the military hardly ever take into consideration, or people at work sometimes don't take into consideration, somebody else has to pay this light bill. I've seen it over and over and over. What about the vehicles that we use at work? Brother Feaster, you was mentioning your vehicles. That was something that was important to you. Do you treat the vehicles that you're given at work to use for work purposes the same way that you treated that Tundra?
How you think about what is the better?
Well, I was just about to say that you may, because you have that understanding that the stewardship, there is no separation about the stewardship at work and the stewardship at home. That's my thought process. Anybody else who has any comments on it, we welcome it. But I don't think there is a distinction. I think those same principles need to apply at work just like they apply at home. God, you gave me this job. You provided me with this job. And how do we connect all this to possession, resources, and finances? I'm sorry, if you don't have a job, then something gets affected on your house. If you don't have that job, something gets affected with your car and your other bills. So I'm about to go off, but we got a caller that wants to come in, and this is our founder of the We Speak Radio Network, Sister Shelley Caldwell. How are you doing this evening? I was waiting for you to press one of your dials to have. You know that.
I was trying to hold myself together. And keep calm over here. You guys are touching of course, that's why you developed this show, to touch some of the core foundations or the core principles in our lives. Regarding our possessions and regarding our resources, you know, and how we actually steward them. The Sanders, Feaster, yourself, you guys have walked across such an awesome, awesome topic that I believe is critical in our lives because we are so wasteful. We are so wasteful as a people in general. And unfortunately, as black people, where we've come from such meager means, all of us, as far as our historic, of course, slavery, you know, or ancestry story, somehow once we have arrived, we find ourselves now thinking that we're living well and above, especially when we have been so fortunate to serve in, especially as military veterans, which I share with you guys, you know, because we really do take for granted that cushion that is automatic, you know, but at the same time, there are people around there now, even especially in today's economy, getting affected by that, which you were saying, Brother Feaster, about, you know, the budget cut. I had a budget meeting today, and I found out that even myself, part-time adjunct professors, will be cut this summer. You know, I had a little crazy spirit. You know, it kind of made me rejoice because I begin to sit back and look at the fact that this now allows me to tap into my resources as now the God-given machine that can develop, create, and manifest into something else at this point as far as my actual provision is concerned. How do I create provision? I've got to be better. How do I bring myself up and above the cuts that are about to happen? Well, why would I have to think that? Because now I have to steward my not only my home, you know, what happens at home, I have to steward that now to say, hey, I still got to create work for myself. So I'm talking about yourself, your peace resource, your self, your internal resource has to kick in. You have to begin to create, recreate, redevelop, and what you call it, deploy yourself in a different way when things are being cut. I'm trying not to preach, JR, you do it to me every time. But even today, you just said something that, you know, as soon as you hear about budget cuts, there's two things that they start cutting anyway before they try to do some of the extremes, such as furloughs. They cut your supply order and they cut your traveling expenses. Is that right?
That is exactly right. That happened to us last year.
Yes, that's two of the first things. So why do we continually think we need post-it notes from 3M when y'all know you used to use scrap paper and much scrap paper from the printer to take notes and make your day work and function?
That's right.
And then you don't steal the post-it notes and take the post-it notes home. You steal it. The ink pen ends up in your purse. Come on. And if you had a printer paper at home and your kids don't like to work, you might think you could take your little bit of printer paper home because you need it at your house, but your house is fine. You know, so if we could go on, and then same thing with the cars. But you are fortunate to be on a job with any type of transportation allowance, whether it is part of your job or not, we just treat that of which we feel like the owner can afford taking for granted if you spend that 100 times over. So, but so to the point where when you look at it, they too have to do what? Be a good steward over the quality of whatever product or service they're trying to put out. And they trust you. They're not. But we are so mistreated. So mistreated. And so I'm telling you what, man, I'm full. I can go on. I'm not going to go on. You did a great job tonight. Thank you. And I'm going to leave with you one thing. Even as veterans, they're getting touched down by the state of our economy, but I think everyone is going to be touched by it. But I found out and I heard something from a friend of mine, and he said this, and I began to think on it. I'm still thinking on it for. He said, Shelly, six figures are no longer a part of my income, but guess what? I found out how to make a pack of chicken stretch over the phone.
Right.
And so we talked about what we learned from our mother, but I think not only just that teacher, but think about it at your job. It's important to stay on your job during the next 2 to 3 months or 6 months and suddenly get the industry with that on. You better find out how to make yourself stretch a little longer because you can submit that creative idea now to your employer from your department. You better recreate now some set of things of value or used to be of value to them. Maybe they're people because you're thinking out of the box. With their welfare, I don't know. I'm just out there. You know, hey,
I know
but it. If not, you have to find out how to make that package. Whatever that package may be in your life, the proverbial piece of natural resource that you think is a natural. Oh, well, that's no big deal. I'm not that bad. Oh, well, you know, we've got to start doing it now. The little things that come in. Thanks, guys. It's been awesome. You guys are doing great always. I appreciate you.
All right, thank you. We hope that everybody was really able to. We know it was starting to break up a little bit, Shelly, so we hope that everybody was really able to get the gist of it. You know, one thing she said, and Brother Fisa, you know, I saw what you just said, you know, the thought about us being wasteful. And that's where I was going. You know, the thought about us being wasteful for what God has given us. Let's just say it in plain terminology. We ain't got to be churchy. That ain't cool. Plain terminology. That just ain't cool. So we just have to do better. I know I got to do better. I'm sitting in this office, and I got papers all over the place. It's not a pigsty, but, you know, when it's time for the show, I'm pulling resources. I'm writing notes. But I got to do better about my office. I got to do better about, you know, my office at work. I have to do better about what the car looks like. Everything that we're doing, we're being watched. I heard a good brother, Minister Sherrod Hart, God bless you, brother. I know you're out there listening to us. He said, somebody's watching you. That brother said that. I was in a service. We were down in Albany, Georgia, a couple of weeks ago. When he said that, not knowing what we were talking about on the show. I said, yeah, that's it. Somebody is watching you. So when it comes to stewardship, take that into consideration. Somebody is looking at how you're being a steward. And oftentimes that can mess up your witness. I'm talking to us Christian folk now. I remember one time, brothers and sisters, there was, in my military chaplaincy days, there was a fellow brother. We were going somewhere, going on a mission, and I got in his truck, and this truck was a living pigsty. And he made a joke about there could be a rat in here. And as he said it jokingly, I really thought, you know what? It wouldn't be surprising if there is one. And I thought about that because can you imagine him picking up somebody on the side of the road that needs some help? And then they get in that car and he says, you know, hey, I'm a minister. That paints a picture about ministry. Even though they're getting a ride, he has or she has that mental image in their head. This is a man of God. What if they're not saved? What if they're not a Christian? When they become a Christian, if they become a Christian, if they learn some of these principles, the things that we're talking about right now, that image that's been imprinted in his mind about the nastiness and filthiness of this quote-unquote man of God, this preacher, this chaplain, this minister, that ain't cool. We struggle against too many things already in the ministry as far as trying to get reach people, trying to help people, lead them to Christ, trying to just show the love of Jesus Christ. It takes a lot already. So one of the things we have to just consider and be very mindful of is what we're doing. So, Sister Sanders, we're about to wrap it up. You know we can go all night. Did you have any? Go ahead and give us your final comments. After that, Brother Fierce, you can go ahead, and then we're going to take it out with some music. We've been trying this music thing, and I think it's been working. So go ahead, Sister Sanders. Do you have any final comments for tonight's show?
I just want to say that I really enjoyed everything that we all bring to the table. You come to the table, you may be uncertain about what you're going to get, what the meal is going to be, but by the end of the show, you leave full. You leave empowered. You leave full of knowledge. You leave with a different awareness. And everything that I heard tonight, talking about value, talking about the effectiveness, talking about our personal experiences is just another reminder that we still need one another, that we can learn from one another, and that we have something to offer the world. We have something to offer ourselves, and that unless we are aware of what things are going on in the world, unless we know what stewardship is, unless we know what possessions, resources, and finances are, will we only continue to struggle and walk around almost as in an ignorant state because we don't know when these things are available to us. So I just want to encourage everybody just to share the wealth, share what you're learning with somebody. I look forward to this every single time, every week, because I know that I'm going to leave with something that I did not know. I'm going to leave with something that's going to challenge me as a person. And so I'm always thankful, and I just thank you again, Nate, for every opportunity that you allow for my voice to be heard. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Love you. That's my cousin, y'all, in case y'all did. Go ahead, Brother Feaster. It's on you, my brother.
I just want to I like her. When I get on here, I learn so much. I mean, my notebook stays right here next to the thing, and I'm writing as we're making comments and stuff like that. And as we're talking about possession, resources, and finances, and talking about stewardship, I just want to bring up two points that have really resounded throughout the last three that we've talked about when it comes to stewardship. The first point is that our value determines our stewardship. Our value determines our stewardship. How we value a thing is going to determine, you know, what type of steward we're going to be with it. And the other thing I want to say is that, actually, two more things, something else just popped in, is the principles of stewardship, they transcend. So one, what we use or learn at work, we can use at home or at our business or whatever the case. And then something that I tied in with, you know, JR, you keep going back to Genesis and the Garden of Eden. And as you were talking about just a few seconds ago, I was thinking about how, based on Adam and the woman not being faithful stewards over the command that God gave them, God removed them out of the garden. Thank you for allowing me to do this again. I love it. And everyone have a great night.
Well, you've heard it all. You heard Shelley Caldwell. You've heard Brother Feaster. You've heard Sister Sanders. And we thank you to all the listeners that have stayed with us through this last hour and a half. We hope that what we've said has been an inspiration to you. We hope that what we've said has taken you to another level where you've been able to see that God wants nothing but the best for you. God wants you to take care of every single thing that he has provided for you. Notice I said that he has provided for you, not what you went out there and got on your own. He wants the best for everything that he's provided for you. He wants you to take care of it in the manner that will be pleasing to him, that will give glory to him, that will give honor to him. He doesn't want any type of barrier from your witness or your ministry because you're not being a good steward, and individuals are out there seeing that. And it's amazing that we're only dealing with, and we've only so far really dealt with in this stewardship series, the book of Genesis. You know why? Because Christianity, brothers and sisters, is simple. It's not as hard and complicated as I believe and others that are in my circle believe. We sometimes, as ministers and pastors and those who have come before us, really have made it out to be. It is really a simple, simple concept. The concept that Jesus Christ said was, love ye one another. So love is an action word. So how you treat not just your neighbor, but your possession, resource, and finances is something that connects you and your neighbor. So what we're going to do, we're going to leave you with the song. It's an instrumental song by a group that I love from my hometown, Frankie Beverly and Mays, and it's called Love the Inspiration. So consider that. Let your opportunity just be there to just walk out whatever it is God is putting before you. And we're going to come back next week, and I think what we're going to do next week, Brother Feaster and Sister Sanders, is I think it would be really befitting if we talk a little bit about the workplace again and stewardship at work, but more so we're going to deal with the house, because you brought up a good point, Brother Feaster. You brought up the point that what it looks like in my house may not be what it looks like in your house. Sister Mary Ann, when she called in, she said the same thing. She brought that to light. So I think in order for us to really try to help and do more than just inspire that it's going to be okay, maybe we should start trying to address some of the questions about what does it look like? What should it look like? We know as Christians there are some scriptures out there that talk about stewardship, but there is not a lot that talk about stewardship specifically that a lot of us know. So let us just deal with that, and we'll get it out on the Facebook page. We ask everybody, if you can, if you're on Facebook, go to our Facebook page and like us. Post comments. You don't have to wait until the day of the show or even after the show. Post them at any time. Let us hear from you, because this is not about us. It's about you and us together as a collective community. So until next time, we pray God's blessings on you. Have a good night. Have a good week, and we'll see you back again next Thursday at 8 p.m.